podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Rolling for JJ Williams into the 25. Williams kicks it on. This could be a try. Williams has scored. That little chip through by Gareth Edwards really caught the Springbok defence by surprise. Williams got his boot as he chipped ahead, kicked it through. The bounce went his way and JJ Williams has put the line.
Welcome to this week's Attacking Scrum podcast. Anders, it's International Week, or the last International Week for a little while. We always hand these over to the listeners, or rather we normally do. Today I have been very, very tempted to read out a 60-minute monologue about why the Dragons are going to win the Heineken Cup, but Dan Killick has convinced me that that is not the right thing to do, and we should still get on with the listener takeover and do the listeners' questions. I think you're probably right there, Dan.
Well, yeah, maybe I'm not though. We might have to do another pod on that though.
I know, maybe that's one to launch a Patreon with for paying customers only to hear my bizarre ramblings about why the Dragons have turned it all around.
That's it.
We are going to get into the internationals, but we're also going to touch on a little bit of club rugby this week because the Heineken Cup does start next week. So it's straight out of the internationals into the world's most confusing edition of the Heineken Cup. But we will be here to help you navigate it. I'm surprised we've had no questions about that. They are all dominated by the Wales-Italy game. So we're going to dive straight in and see if Dan's got any answers. First up, Liam Thomas, good friend of the show. I haven't heard from Liam for a while. Does Wales know who to play at 10 for Pivac's system?
I would say we don't at the moment know which 10 to go for. And I reckon that's true in a number of positions really as well. Certainly in the nine berth then. So 9 and 10 is still up for grabs really. I think that Sheedy had an okay game yesterday, didn't he? I think he struggled a little in terms of settling into the game, getting into the attacking side of things. But he did grow into it, didn't he? Especially with sort of 15 to 20 minutes to go.
Yeah, he did. I think it's just so tricky to play in that position when, like you say, you're not sure if it's your jersey or not. The halfbacks have been, rotated throughout the entire year. So I do think that makes it tricky. But what's even harder is when you're playing behind a pack that hasn't really fired. Went a bit better yesterday at points. I think, the front five in particular I'm looking at. But I think that does make it tricky. I don't know, that for me is where the big problems are. Is it's still all about up front? And I'm going to go back on myself immediately here. But you're absolutely right. The 9 and 10 situation is very, very confusing. And that's, if you are trying to evolve the style of play into something different, they're two absolutely pivotal positions to get right.
Yeah, they are. I mean, it's a difficult position for Sheedy, isn't it, coming in? Because if he's coming in at 10 into a settled side where all the outside backs are the same. The nine is the nine. The back row is all the same, and you've got a settled front row and second row partnerships. Then it's slightly easier to get me. You're still going to be nervous. Still not going to be able to read every single play, but it's very, very difficult for him to come in and just have an outstanding game. And I think there's a little bit of us that almost wants to see that magic that you see for Bristol. You almost expect it. But I think maybe we're probably expecting a little bit too much from him. So if you strip it back, he went fairly well, didn't he? He got some good points with the boot. He did make a couple of errors, but to be fair to him, he stuck at it, didn't he? And he didn't let his head go down. When Italy came back into the game, it probably would have been fairly easy for heads to have gone, started to force things, but he just stuck to the same things he was trying to do, and they came good eventually. So he persevered, and I think that's quite telling from him. Really, he looks quite composed, doesn't he?
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. Actually, I think you're absolutely right in terms of the composure. I would say, actually, again, you know, we've been fairly critical of this side all autumn, but I would say that that would have been a very easy game for the wheels to have come off, particularly with, you know, some of the injuries. I think you lose the experience of Liam Williams early doors, and you've got is it Johan Lloyd or Johan Davis? Johan Lloyd, isn't it?
Johan Lloyd.
Some reason I always get that wrong. And yeah, you know, so you've got a very inexperienced 15, and I think, you know, it's particularly at the end of the game where you've ended up with, you know, without a second row in there too. It would have been very easy to have lost that game when you went behind. So to be fair, there is a bit of character shown there from them as a team unit, and I think you do deserve credit for that. But
it would have been very easy to sort of lose the ship, and he did. He steadied it well. I thought we struggled quite a bit when Liam went off. We lost quite a lot of shape, but we did come back from it. So yeah, at the moment I don't think we do, and I think there's you know, a good number of people are calling for us to have a look at Jared Evans as well.
It's so difficult. I've been very impressed with Jared in this season, really. And he's so much fun to watch. As you know, he's my kind of 10. He's very old school. You know, he's an old school running 10. He carries the ball in two hands. He throws dummies. He's a little bit of a throwback, which naturally I love. But it's so difficult to gauge whether that form will translate at the international level. Because, again, Jared would be the kind of player you would want to settle into the side when you've got a solid pack and an established nine. It's you know, I'm a big, big fan of his, and every time he gets the ball when he's playing, he excites me. But it's just tricky. I think this whole autumn has been dogged by the fact that Pivac has not known what his best side is. And yes, to a certain degree, the autumn campaign is for finding that out. But come Six Nations, he's got to have a much clearer idea of what his best 23 is, because otherwise we are going to go from stuttering performance to stuttering performance.
We need a lot more consistency, don't we? Which obviously Pivac's come out and said that he knows, you know, a lot's come out of this, and I think a lot has come out of it, but I still think there's a lot of questions in there as well. But on the 10 position, I think it's up for grabs. I don't think anybody's really grabbed it. And I think there's a case for us to see Jared Evans back in the Welsh shirt as well.
I think
he's playing particularly well for the Blues, and he if other people are going to be given a chance and a run, then I think he deserves that as well.
But I think this is the problem, Dan. Is it's you've got kind of an open audition at the moment. You know, we've played whatever it is 5 nines throughout the year. We've had a couple of tens. If you start throwing Jared into the mix now as well, it just becomes like, you know, you have a couple of good games and then you get a run in a Wales shirt. It doesn't work out for you, so try someone else. This has been the whole problem for me. And like you say, particularly at halfbacks, really key part of the pitch, particularly where you're trying to change the way that you're playing. There's just been no consistency. And this is the part that you get paid the big bucks for as an international head coach, is for getting your selection. And the entire year it's gone wrong. Next year it has to go right, because otherwise it's going to be a very, very difficult Six Nations campaign. And if it's anything like the autumn or anything like last year's or this year's Six Nations, you know, he's probably not going to be there, but at the end of it.
That's right. Yeah. That break clause is coming up, isn't it? And I think a big part of the 10, Jed, is going to be linked to the 9 as well, or it should be anyway. Who plays 9? And if Thomas Williams is playing, you know, plays very well for the Blues and Jared's going well, then that's a combination that, you know, maybe they'll look at, and those two will come in. Does he stick with Sheedy? And, you know, he's a different type of 10, isn't he? And then have a more controlling 10 on the bench, or again, stick, you know, go with a flyer on the bench as well. So there's a lot of options, and it's pretty tough, isn't it, to know what to do.
If the weekend has taught us anything, though, because we've not mentioned Dan Bigger there, if the weekend has taught us anything, it's to not write off the players who have served us so well for the last 10 years, because Tipperick and Faletau, I mean, you may as well pick them at halfbacks the way they were linking up on Saturday. They were absolutely phenomenal. I put a tweet out about this. That might have been Toby's best performance in a Wales jersey. And that's some list of good performances that he's put in over the years. He was utterly magnificent. And Tipperick was not far behind that.
Yeah, I thought Faletau was incredible. And it was just so good to see him back, wasn't it? In, you know, brilliant in not only in defence, but, you know, absolutely outstanding in attack all over the park. Is, I know you're not a man for stats, but his stats are off the charts, aren't they, from yesterday? And it was just, yeah, brilliant. So good to see. And his link-up play with Tipperick was great. Tipperick was, yeah, on another level. And the two of them were world-class performances, weren't they, from the both of them? And it carried, you know, it carried the Welsh side, and they were the difference, weren't they?
They were absolutely the difference. They were superb performances from the pair of them. That's, I guess, the thing that worries me a little bit, is that we were very reliant on individual performances to dig us out of that. But, you know, sometimes it is like that. I suppose the thing that will give Wayne Pivak hope is that is the kind of stuff that he will want to see a lot more of, is his class players performing and linking up like that and making big line breaks and, you know, scoring some spectacular tries, or certainly setting some up. So I think that is a big positive. I'll give him that. The question is now, can you do it against, you know, against the Englands and the Irelands and the Frances and the Scotlands? You know, that's the big test that will be coming up in a few months' time. But anyway, let's move on, because we have got tons of questions, as always, to get through. This one is from Quinton Quarantino. Should Sam Parry be the number two Wales hooker behind Ken Owens when Owens returns?
Well, yeah, I think that, you know, I've been calling for Parry to, you know, to get some game time, and I think he didn't disappoint. I think he had a couple of wayward throws, didn't he, in the line out. Maybe, I don't know, is it a bit maybe to be expected then, in a, you know, pack that he hasn't played with before? I think that's probably, you know, it was probably going to happen. I thought round the park he was a right old nuisance. He was a turnover threat, wasn't he, which we know he is, you know, often gets turnovers for the Ospreys. And, you know, he got his try. He quite often gets tries as well. So I thought he had a solid performance in the front row. It wasn't spectacular, but a good outing from him. Looking forward to seeing more from him.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think it was a solid performance. I am a big fan of Sam Parry, actually. I think he's been desperately unlucky with injuries over the years. And I think that's why it's kind of taken him a while to get a few appearances in a red jersey, but he did well, give a good account of himself. The line out was not good again yesterday as a unit. It's been poor all autumn, as we know. It's been poor for years, but that is something that just has to be addressed. And it hasn't seemed to make too much of a difference who's been playing at hooker. It's been weak across the board.
Jed, how do we address it?
Absolutely no idea. I think, you know, I've got no idea.
It's a fair answer.
It just seems like, you know, we've had Robin McBride coach that set of forwards, an ex-hooker himself, you know, a forwards coach who's got a fantastic reputation, has walked straight into a job at Leinster. But you would never say that, you know, we had a couple of good terms where the line out went well, but you would never say it was a particular strength of Wales. It was always, if it went well, if it was solid, then we were in the game. It was never something that was particularly a huge strong point of ours. You got another former international hooker coach in them now, and it doesn't seem to be any better. I don't know whether there are, I know we've spoken about this before, but whether there is someone who you can bring in as a specialist within this. For me, it's always been like the safest ball is when we sling Toby or Tipperick up. It just seems to be that's where we've been able to pick up the, it's looked at it's most solid. So yeah, I don't know. It's not something I can really suggest any proper answers behind. Have you got any suggestions?
I haven't got the answer. No. And as you said, it's been, the lineup's been appalling for, for so long, hasn't it? Apart from that one campaign. But I do think that potentially we're missing Corey Hill in that area.
I was going to mention this. Right, this is something different. When we're talking about the Pivac style of play and needing people to turn ball over, right? Corey Hill has been fit all season. He's barely featured this autumn. He comes off the bench, wins one turnover, wins another one, which was unfairly penalised. So I haven't watched it back again, but at the time I thought it didn't look to me like he came in from the side. Where the hell's he been all autumn?
Yeah, it's a good question. I know you're a big fan of him, and I think and you know, as am I, and he's technically very, very good, isn't he? I don't know, but I believe he's heavily involved in the line out when he's on. He's, you know, he's a good caller in that regard. And I think our line out functions a lot better when Corey Hill's on the park. Mm. I thought he had a brilliant game when he came on. I thought that we went up a few gears in terms of the speed of ball with him. And also, I've got to say that Wainwright made a difference there as well. The pair of them coming on. And I think that when you look at Faletau and Tipperick, how they were reading each other so well. They were so in tune, weren't they, on that wavelength, that I think Corey and Wainwright knew that, okay, we can add to this. We know how they're playing, those two boys. And because they played alongside them before. And so in some regards, the fact that it was, you know, we were reliant upon Toby and Faletau, I think is actually fine, because when you then add in the likes of Corey Hill coming in and Wainwright, we went up a level as well. And, you know, Gareth Davis, you know, coming off the bench, I know it was possibly a slightly easier time for him to come on because the Italians were getting a bit tired, but they all seemed to start reading each other's plays again. So it was hugely encouraging. But to go back to, I think we miss Corey Hill in the line-out. And I actually think we miss him all around the park.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'd agree with you there. As you can tell, you're quite right. I am a big fan. I'd like to think I'm not being kind of one-eyed because I've watched him a lot of the Dragons. But I just think for me, this is something I mentioned a few weeks ago. The thing Gatland was so good at was identifying players who he knew could compete at the highest level. And Corey Hill is one of those. I've said it before. He's had big, big games for Wales. And, you know, Charteris was another who had, if you watched Charteris at the start of his career, you probably wouldn't have thought, okay, yeah, he was massive, but you wouldn't have thought, oh, this guy's going to be a really top international test player. But again, Gatland saw that and didn't, you know, discard him after a couple of patchy performances. And from kind of 2011 onwards, he was an absolutely integral part. Gatland does this so well, is identifying players who can perform at that highest level. And at the moment, I feel like that's really what we're missing in there, is that solidity. And I don't know, for me, it kind of showed what he was capable of doing. And then, you know, the breakdown was a mess again yesterday. And it just looked a lot better when he came on. And again, actually, you mentioned Gareth Davis there. This is another example of someone with the 21 shirt coming on and kind of staking their claim for nine. I'm not actually sure whether it gives us any answers, but raises more questions. It's been the theme of the autumn.
It has. Yeah. How many times have we said it? And yes, continuing along those lines, isn't it? Something else on Corey Hill as well, because I did think he had a massive impact when he came on, was the sort of dominance of his tackles as well. Mm. And the carries that he had. I thought that from second row, we were pretty passive on some of the carries. So we just about, I mean, the Italians were hitting hard, weren't they? But I was just a bit disappointed that we weren't running in with everything we had, or certainly didn't appear that way. But Corey comes on, he's just a slight shimmy of the hips and a sidestep like Faletau, but obviously not, you know, no one's in the same league there, are they? But he's just a smart player, isn't he? And some of the hits he put in as well were big, you know, big hits, knocking them back. And I think it's easy to look at Corey and think, well, you know, look at the body shape on him. He looks quite slight, doesn't he? He's got a few curves on him, and he, you know, standing next to some of the other second rows, you can kind of think, well, that's the guy we want to go into battle with. But I think we've missed an informed Corey Hill In the technical, the but technicalities of
that's what I, don't get. He's played really well since rejoining Cardiff. He looked very good for them, and formed a good relation. You know, a good second row partnership with Seb Davis. For me, I really don't understand how Corey Hill coming back fully fit, having been off for 6 months, wouldn't be a really easy thing for Pivac to say, right, this guy's going to feature. Unless there is something there that we don't know. I find it really odd how little we've seen of him this autumn.
Yeah, I can only think that they don't think he's in form, or maybe that I can't see how they don't think that he'd fit in with the Pivac style of play, because he is absolutely that type of guy, isn't he? Mm. He's got good hands. He gets a turnover or two. Good
athletic,
tackler.
Gets around the park.
He is. He picks really good lines when he runs. So he does burst through, doesn't he? Because he picks a great line, soft shoulders, lugs cutting in, likes an arc in run as well. So he's everything that Pivac, I would have thought, would be looking for in a second row. Now, the only thing that may have gone against him is that because the front row and the pack were performing so badly, the coaches got caught up in, we need the biggest of guys in the second row. But that's gone down to obviously bad selection in the front row, which I think has happened this campaign. There's no doubt about it. I know we can say, well, we wanted to see certain players, but the selection has not been right. And yeah, I think Corey showed yesterday that he needs to be involved. He should be involved. And we've also got, importantly, another leader on the park when he's there.
Yeah, absolutely agree with that. Right, we better move on to another couple of questions. This one's from Rob Bradshaw. Is there any noticeable difference between the style we are trying to develop now and the Scarlets under Pivac, or is it too early to tell given the time needed to adapt and the lack of set-piece possession that we've had so far?
I think yesterday you could start to see a little bit more of the way in which Pivac wants to play in the wider channels, forwards, Toby and Tipperick were enjoying themselves, weren't they, out wide, and the way in which we're able to build some phase play started to tip a nod to that sort of Scarlet's way of playing. I think before that, no, we haven't really seen a great deal. And to link it to the question, There was no way of us being able to see the Pivac style of play because the set piece has been that poor. It's been disastrous, hasn't it?
Yeah,
shocking. Scrums have been really poor as well. And then you can also bring the collisions early on in the campaign and the turnovers. We've been beaten there, and we've also been technically very, very bad in that area as well. And that was the same yesterday.
Do you know what I think doesn't help as well, Dan, is, you know, we look back to that Scarlet side that won the title, you know, kind of 3 years ago or over 3 years ago now and made the European semis. That's the form that Pivac got this job on the back of, was the work he did with that vintage of the Scarlets. Now, the rules have been, or the interpretations of the rules, particularly at the breakdown, have changed an awful lot since then. So what the Scarlets did so well was turn ball over, because they have lots of players on the park who could do that. We said before, Tyburn, Barkley, Cubby, all of these players who were turning ball over, and they could break and score tries. Now, it's a lot harder to do that. A, as you say, we've not been winning many turnovers, but also the way the breakdown is refereed means that there are a lot more penalties there than there are clean turnovers, or certainly that's my impression of it. And I think that, again, like you say, when your set piece isn't functioning well, that's not as big a benefit as it is if you are a side who's got a set piece that's going well, or you're getting the ball in hand and you've got the opportunity to break.
Yeah, totally. So you think then as well that the fact that, you know, obviously England have said it many times now, haven't they, that they don't really want the ball. It's too risky to have it. Mm. But that's actually going against a natural sort of Pivac way of playing.
Yeah, I tell you who would have loved the, you know, this kind of setup. Gatland and Edwards would have been all over this kind of interpretation. So, you know, I know obviously Gatland's had his trouble since returning to the Chiefs, but I think given that, you know, if he was still in charge of Wales, this probably would have played in his hands. It kind of reminds me of that 2008 team, really, when had a really good kicking game. You had Lee Byrne at fullback, who not only was a great kicker, but was fantastic under the high ball. And then, you know, you had players like Mark Jones in there as well. And you had Shane just to add a bit of magic. But it was, you know, we played a very defense orientated game. And we played, you know, we tried to play in the right parks and we kicked a lot of ball then. And, you know, without getting into the, you know, is rugby boring debate, which I know we've kind of covered, it's at the moment, the way the laws are being interpreted definitely means that you are better off not having it, because it is too risky. And that, I think, will not be helping the style of rugby that Wayne Pivak was hired on. You know, if that's what he's trying to implement, then he's obviously going to have had to have changed from that, because it's a much more kicking orientated game than we were used to seeing them play at the Scarlets.
Yeah. I mean, Pivak's style of play is, you know, before this new law change was high risk, wasn't it? Because you've got to be so accurate. And if it goes wrong, you're going to be penalised, but now even more so. Hmm. So yeah, that's, we'll have to see how it goes, right?
We will. Right, we've got loads more questions to get through, and I do want to have a quick look ahead to the Heineken Cup. So always a good time to talk about the Heineken Cup before it started, because it means that none of the sides are out of it. So we're going to be doing all of that in the second half, but first we're going to have this very quick break. Right, this one is from Ian Alexander. Dan, pessimistic, but if it wasn't for Tipperick and Faletau playing to their world-class best, would we have lost that game?
Quite possibly, yeah.
Take your time.
We would have. We would have, I think. I mean, we said it earlier, didn't we? They were the difference. You know, they made things happen. They made us tick. And everything came off the back of their plays, really. That's quite likely the case. I do think, though, that, you know, within performances regularly, you do have a couple of standout players that just move and sort of provide oil and gel to the whole side. And we've been crying out for it from Faletau. And we, you know, he had a good game the week before, but this game yesterday was another level from him against, you know, a side that were physical, weren't they? They were up for it, and they can be a little bit difficult at times to break down, but he led extremely well. So yeah, probably I'd agree with that.
Yeah, I'd definitely agree with that. I thought that, as you know, as you said in the first half, both those players were absolutely outstanding, and it needed that level of class to get us through it. I think the disappointing thing for me with the performance was that second quarter of the game, having gone 14-0 up, completely switched off. You know, it was a proper, I don't know, lack of concentration that let them back into the game. And we could have got caught off guard very, very easily. And, you know,
classic Welsh performance, I thought you were going to say there.
it was a real kind of like asleep at the wheel for that second quarter. And came out after half time, and then they scored. You know, they scored and scored a try. The big open side flanker, Mayer, kind of barreling his way over and skinning Lewis Rees-Zammit on the outside, which wasn't fun to watch. But yeah, as I've said, you know, good character to get to that point. But these are the things you've got to earn out. If you play 20 minutes like that against England or Ireland or France or New Zealand or anyone, that's game over. You know, you will lose a fixture if you're that sleepy and dozy during that extended period of time. So, yeah, that, you know, there's lots of things to be worried about. But as I said, composure to not throw it away. But it was Tipperick and Faletau for me that really did the put in match winning performances. So yeah, fair play to the pair of them for doing that.
I think you said then. Did you say dopey or lazy?
Dozy, dopey.
Dozy, that's it. Dozy,
well, yeah. I think either works, because it's, yeah, you know, it was not switched on clever rugby. It was messy at the breakdown. All the things that had been bad in previous weeks
kind of
reared their head again, didn't they?
They did, yeah, and that's been a cause for concern for me in terms of our discipline. And it was it was really apparent yesterday, wasn't it, how basic a lot of our pens were, really, that we conceded, because they weren't. It wasn't from sort of Italy putting us under pressure, I thought, really. It was just really basic mistakes from us. And, you know, you alluded to earlier, really, if we were playing a stronger side, we would have been punished in that first half quite brutally.
Mm.
But because it was Italy, we weren't. And we just seemed to make similar mistakes, you know, two or three times over before we then corrected it. But we can't be making... We can't be making the mistakes in the first place, but then to do the same mistake two or three times on top of that's a big concern, isn't it? I don't know what that's coming down to. Concentration, I don't know, but it was sort of across the park, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And yeah, the penalty count has not been good all autumn. It was pretty ugly in that first half again yesterday. So again, things that just have to get fixed before the Six Nations begin. But just sticking with what we were saying there and that question from Ian, this one's come from Gareth Davis. If we had lost, would it have mattered? We got more international game time for the likes of Luis Rees-Zammit, Sheedy, Lloyd, Parry, Botham, etc. We need to change our perspective. Expecting to bring on the next generation to compete at the next Six Nations Rugby World Cup means these type of fixtures are useful. What do you make of that, Dan? Would it have mattered? I think it would have, actually. As much as I've not been a big fan of this tournament, I just think you have to go out and get a win against Italy when you're in that bad form.
Yeah, because of how poor we've been playing and the results have gone against us, and rightly so. We haven't deserved the wins. I think that was a must-win game yesterday for Pivac, the rest of the coaches, and also the team as well. Just to show that we can beat size. I mean, we should always be beating Italy, shouldn't we? They're not a great side at the moment. And yeah, I think the positives are that we've seen a lot of different players play. I think
I'm not sure this is a positive. I know we like to, this autumn is for experimenting a little bit, but I can't help but think that I know he's given a good account of himself, but I think Jim Botham would have been better off playing for Cardiff over the autumn. And to a certain extent, Shane Lewis-Hughes, again, he did well, good individual performances, but I don't know, that balance of the back row wasn't right really until yesterday. And yeah, okay, all right, Botham was a part of that. But I think that, you know, the form players, if you look at the outstanding performances of individuals throughout the autumn, Wainwright, Tipperick and Faletau have really been the standouts. I can't help but think if they'd played together a fair bit more, that we would have had a better tournament. I don't know. You know, maybe it is more important that we've got these answers now at the end of the tournament, going into the Six Nations. But I just think that there's a lot of players who've kind of been chucked in, and there's a lot of experimentation. And I think when you're doing it with one or two, that's okay, because you're able to bring them in. Like we were saying at the start of the show, you bring them into a settled side. But it's very, very difficult to bring in wholesale changes. I don't know. I feel, again, I'm being hypocritical here, because at the start of the tournament, I did say that that's what this is all about. And I was also saying that we should be getting people capped, you know, get Sheedy capped, get Luis Rees-Zammit capped. You know, I even wanted to bring in Varney and get him capped, didn't I? So, you know, what do I know? But yeah, all I would say is I think the chopping and changing hasn't helped. The fact that we've used lots of players, maybe in the long term it will, but it hasn't helped the performances in the short term.
Yeah, I think it hasn't helped in terms of the performance, that we've made so many changes. And I think we've got, you know, a lot of it's come from the wrong calls in the front row. We've played the wrong, you know, we've got the bench wrong. The bench should have often been starting, and then it just put more pressure on other, you know, other facets of the game, really, all over. So I think it was good that we've seen, you know, people like Botham, because we know that he can play at test level, and, you know, where he's better suited to that sort of physical, you know, that sort of physical game around the fringes, and, you know, with a six on his back, and Pivac's tried to play him out wide. He's, you know, I think he could potentially do a job in, you know, out there if he really has to, but that's not where we want him playing. So, and then for Shane Lewis Hughes, I thought he played very well, but the balance wasn't right. But at least we know that he can front up in those games. So there has been quite a lot of positives, but equally what we haven't got is we still don't know what the best side is, do we? And certainly in certain positions. So it's sort of, I don't know, it leaves us feeling a little bit sort of all at sea, really, doesn't it, with this campaign. But I think in hindsight, we could have done a lot better here with getting the selection right and then tweaking,
yeah,
you know, certain selections that then would have meant, right, that now works. He can slot in there, and he's also good enough. And then trying someone else, also giving people a run of, more of a run of games. But, you know, look, I suppose that's hindsight for you, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And you look, if there was a game to do it, it's that last game against Italy, isn't it? The consolation game, if you like. So certainly there's an element of that. I think we have got a few more answers. I think you have to look at those performances from Tipperick and Faletau and say that these players have to be in that back row and you pick a six accordingly. Now, whether that's a Moriarty type who's gonna just get through loads of big hits in defence for you, or whether it's about bringing in bringing in another Fetcher, an Ellis Jenkins, Ollie Griffiths type. That's then the thing to ask at six. But I think you have to look at that seven and eight and say, right, we now know that they need to be in the team.
Oh yeah, for definite. I don't think there was any real question marks over Tipperick, was there throughout the campaign. Toby obviously did start very, very slowly, didn't he? He really did. But yeah, he's come into it, and you know, what a back row now when Navidi comes back in.
I'd even forgotten to mention Navidi there. Exactly. Yeah, you've got Navidi to add into the mix as well. Well, actually, yeah, if Navidi's fit come the Six Nations, then you know, then you look at that and that's a mouthwatering six, seven, yeah, eight.
We've probably got three back rows now we could put out when everyone's fit. So,
but was that not the back row that started against England at Twickenham, you know, in February? Are we not, has it taken us all year to get to the conclusion that, oh, do you know what, the best side was the one that started at Twickenham all those months ago?
Well, I think that we probably did know that, didn't we? But it was, you know, we obviously with injuries, we haven't been able to play Navidi, and Navidi's been, you know, we just need him somewhere, you know, somewhere in that back row, don't we? But it's six has been a bit of an issue, a big issue for us, isn't it, during this campaign, and more than that, the balance. But I do think that the balance has been affected hugely because we've got the front row, the front row wrong, and arguably you could say the second row as well, which yeah, then does have an effect on the balance of the back row and who's doing what. And you know, if you're a player that likes to play in a certain way and you're doing the jobs of many others, your overall impact is going to go down, it's going to be diminished, and eventually you can look as if you're not really on the park. And I think partly that has happened at times for Wales.
Yeah, no, great points. This one is from Jonathan Davis. Positives from the autumn. He has suggested Lewis Rees-Zammit, Johnny Williams, Sheedy, etc. Have we discovered any players who weren't good enough? And we're going to still need to win more turnover ball against top sides. Definitely agree on the turnover point. I think we've covered that. Yeah, what are the positives for the autumn been for you?
So, yeah, I think it's been great seeing Zammit, hasn't it? Play. I think he's had some good games. You know, one or two errors in there, which he's always going to have coming into international rugby, but he's shown up well. Johnny Williams, I thought, has, you know, looks like a really, really good find at 12.
I think that's his shirt now. I think that's his shirt. It's just offered a bit in a side that's been faltering. Having that direct option at 12, I think, has made a big difference. So, and he's done more than that too. But I have been impressed. I think I said at the start of the autumn that I'd only seen a bit of him and it had been solid, but I was yet to see, right, Johnny Williams is the answer. I think he's performed very well across the autumn and has made that 12 shirt his to lose, really.
He has, yeah. He's got that at the moment, hasn't he? Which is, which is great. And I like seeing Sam Parry yesterday. I think that it's amazing to think that he's 29 years of age, isn't he? Just as you said earlier, you know, some terrible, terrible injuries that meant that we're only seeing him now, really. But he's a good option. Sheedy, yeah, he's, you know, it's not an easy position to play. Is it 10? A lot of 10s have struggled. I think it's very rare that you come in as a 10 and have, you know, just start playing fantastically well. You need to, I think you said it earlier, didn't you? You need to almost know that the shirt is yours for a run of games. And if you don't perform after that run, then it's taken off you. But, you know, it's too difficult a position to just sort of, you know, come in at an international level and slot in. I know some of the best in the world have done that, but it's good to see Sheedy. He doesn't look out of place there. I think that there was a few calls yesterday that he was sort of shuttling along the, you know, along the back line and gave a few poor passes to the centres who then got clattered. And then others were saying that, you know, what he was doing there was sort of drawing in the inside and the outside from preventing them from going too wide, which was part of what he was trying to do. I'm not too sure about that, to be honest, but like I said earlier, he stuck to it, didn't he? And he delivered those good passes and it's so easy when the game isn't quite going as well as you'd like it to, that your head just goes, your confidence drops. And so much of the game is about confidence, didn't he? And he's obviously got it. He's got the minerals to just keep going. And then he delivered that killer pass, which was a great pass. It really was.
Yeah, it was a lovely pass.
Because it wasn't easy to do either. And he made it look great. So yeah, I think that's a real positive as well. Him playing. And yeah, you know, I think we can put in both of them in there as well, has shown up well. I think it was a difficult game for him yesterday.
I think he's definitely shown up well. And I'm a big, big fan of his, right? But I don't think he gets in that squad. If I'm honest,
no, he's not going to
fit. You know,
I don't think he'd be anywhere near.
For me, given he's had so little club rugby, I probably wouldn't have fast tracked. Yeah, I know there's been injuries, so yeah, okay, maybe he's been fast tracked in. But I don't think that he's going to be have his place in the squad cemented off the back of the autumn. I think he's, you know, it's now back to Cardiff and go and keep putting those performances in. Like I say, I'm a big, big fan. But Tipperick, Faletau, Navidi, Wainwright, Moriarty when he's fit, I still think a considerable step up at this stage. He's got loads more to give. And, you know, he's got the potential to be real, real top class. So I'm not having a go at him at all here. But for me, I do think that there's, you know, there it is really important now that he goes and gets a good run again to Cardiff and carries on developing his developing, because he 14 games of rugby he played, 14 professional games of rugby before getting his first international cap. So, you know, I think there's just a degree of getting yards under the belt now.
Yeah, there is, but I think he'll feel fantastic along with Shane Lewis Hughes going back into the Cardiff Blues camp, thinking, you know, we've done well there. We've shown up. We've fronted up. And we didn't look out of place in you know, playing international rugby. And as long as they're managed well, and, you know, in their debrief, it's, you know, they need to be told, don't they, that look, you've played brilliantly, boys, but, you know, you are behind a number of the other players. That's just the way it is. But go back,
keep
working hard. Take the experience that you've got from this, and, you know, keep working hard and sharing your experiences with, you know, with some of the other younger guys, because I know they're young themselves, but I think it's always good to help others. And that can only hopefully benefit us moving forward, as long as they're managed. They don't think, well, they don't get disappointed then. They're not then selected, because realistically, they're only going to be selected if there's injuries, isn't there? And, you know, we've got, you know, the likes of, say, Ollie Griffiths then, who's not selected at the moment, but it's just the way he plays. If he stays fit, he's coming in in some form, isn't he? He really is.
Right, we've got so many more questions. I don't think we're going to get through them all tonight. So apologies to anyone whose questions we don't get through, but keep sending them through. Really appreciate it. And it's always good to be able to hand the show over to you, the listeners, because that way we get to talk about what you want to hear. So thank you to everyone who sent them in. This one is from Sean Jones. Couple of cracking questions here. Wales need to pick a scrum after the Six Nations and stick with them. Who would you pick? And his second question is, what players would you bring in from outside the squad for the Six Nations?
So the nine position, I'd have to hold my hands up and say I don't know at the moment. It's a lot of it's going to have to go down to regional form now, isn't it? Over the next few weeks, there's a lot of big games coming up, and we're going to have to see how all of the nines play. I don't think any of us can really say that is, you know, this particular guy is the nine for us at the moment, because there's been so much movement in that position. Good number of people talking about, you know, Thomas Williams. I think he's somebody that I know you like. You know, I like him. He's got errors to his game though, which, okay, you know, all of our nines, you know, seem to have at the moment. But I think Thomas Williams is someone that is a really exciting prospect. If he can tidy up a few parts of his game, then he's got to be there, or, you know, there or thereabouts. And maybe that's another link in then with Jared. But we'll have to that's another pod, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You're right. I think the Christmas derbies, there will be a lot on the line. I think that's going to play a big part in terms of who gets into the squad. One thing that I think hasn't helped was this. Yeah, and we covered this at length last week, but the chopping and changing at nine, particularly bringing Lloyd in from out of nowhere to then be on the bench to then starting, I think was a very, very odd decision and kind of very strange selection policy. I would like to see someone get a run of games at nine, because we just haven't had that. And Thomas Williams, if I had to pick someone now, would probably be my front runner. I just think that he's the kind of player that can make a big, big difference. But again, maybe now is not the time to be picking someone who's an exciting jack in the box of a nine when you really need ultra reliable box kicking. But I said that's another thing. But yeah, if it was up to me right now and I was trying to build that side, it probably would be the one I'd go for, and I'd give him a run of games. In relation to the other one, what players would you bring in outside of the squad? You've mentioned him there. If Ollie Griffiths is fit, he is straight into the squad. And he, where we're talking about turnover, he is a wrecking ball at the moment. He's causing absolute havoc at every ruck. It's, you know, I know you have to take it with a pinch of salt, because it's not only the Pro 14, but it is the Pro 14 while the internationals are away. But we've said for a while, this kid is kid, you know, not even a kid anymore, he's 25, 26, but he's absolute class. And if he can stay fit, I would just love to see him get a proper outing for Wales, because he has everything. He's a really strong ball carrier. He's a demon at the breakdown. He gets through a stack of work. He's an absolute joy to watch. And I can't think of anyone in the world who would particularly want to, you know, would want to play against him. He's a nuisance. He's a pest. He's like a rabid dog at the breakdown. So he's the one that springs to mind for me.
Yeah, he is. He'd relish having a go at anyone as well, wouldn't he? He loves a battle, and he loves fronting up. And you know, obviously, you know, at the moment he's playing well in when the internationals are out. But we've seen him have, you know, he almost without exception has a man of the match performance in almost every game he plays, doesn't he? And that's when the internationals are there as well. So yeah, he's somebody that I think we've got to get involved in the Welsh squad.
Any other players, Dan, who's caught your eye these kind of last few weeks or this season?
I think for me, most of the most of the players that I'd like to see are actually involved in the in the Welsh setup. I think that maybe Prothero.
Interesting.
Is someone that I just keep my eye on at the moment. He just seems to have so much time on the ball, runs lovely lines, and he's creating a lot for the Ospreys. When you look at their tries, there's a lot that's coming from him. So he's pretty exciting. But there's a couple of decent centres out there playing well as well. But I think at the moment, really, the boys that are involved are, at the moment, I can't see anybody else coming in other than Ollie Griffiths, really, and
Thomas,
yeah, and Jared. I do think Jared is playing well enough to be looked at as well.
Okay, interesting one. Yeah, I think, as we said there, a lot is going to hinge on the opening rounds of the Heineken Cup, Challenge Cup, and then the Christmas Derby. So there's a lot of rugby to be played between now and the Six Nations, and I think that's what you've got to base it on, because at least the derbies are a step up in terms of intensity. I think you can always read a bit more into that form than you can ordinary Pro 14 form. And then, Europe is a different, is a different kettle of fish. So I think that's what we've kind of got to have a look at. Right, we've probably got time for one more question. So let us go for this one from Matt Cornelius. If and when Anscombe regains fitness, is he the clear choice for Wales 10 and straight back into the squad? If so, at the expense of who?
So on current standings and how it's going, yeah, I would say if Anscombe would be the 10 that would, pretty much walk back in, really, if he's playing the way...
This is the problem, mate. At the moment, it's so hard to see him regaining fitness. That's the real problem. And he's been out for a heck of a long time, and he's going to be out a hell of a lot longer. He hasn't played a game since signing for the Ospreys. So it's, And I don't think we can become fixated on it. And so for me, it would be if he regains fitness and gets a run of games for the Ospreys, and has proven, that he's still the player he was before, which I really hope he is, because I think it's desperately unlucky, because he made a massive impact at 10 for the Grand Slam. And I think it definitely blunted us somewhat in the World Cup. Not, as you know, like there's very few people out there who are as big a dad, bigger fans as me. And he put in massive performance at the World Cup. But I think just having both of them in the match day 23 was so, so important. I've said it before, Anscombe was, able to look to get the ball, moving and look to create a little bit more when he was on the pitch. Bigger would come on, shore things up, close games out. And that was absolutely huge. So for me, it has been a massive loss, and I do feel for him, but it's such a huge if right now. I just hope he's able to regain fitness and get some game time. Well, whenever it's going to be, but it's no time soon. That's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, in like a utopian world, and he's able to come straight back in as the player he was, he'd be there, wouldn't he? He'd be our 10, and he would answer. It would answer a lot for us. With the way Pivac plays as well, he's right in there. But it isn't gonna work out like that, is it? As you said, he's gonna have to play a series of games just to get the feel back, and hopefully he can come through that. But that just us talking like that shows, doesn't it, that the 10 shirt is up for grabs.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Okay, unfortunately, that's probably all we've got time for in terms of listeners' questions. We do want to have a quick look ahead to the European rugby. So just a recap on the fixtures. Gets underway on Friday night, Dan. And the first Welsh side in action is Cardiff Blues away at Newcastle. This is in the Challenge Cup, of course, which you'll be able to see on S4C as well, which is good news. If you haven't got a BT subscription, it's good to know that will be on some free-to-air TV. Newcastle versus Cardiff. Newcastle have started the season very well. Cardiff have had some decent performances in amongst some bad ones. What do you think is going to happen here? Which of these two sides is kind of going to be taking it a bit more seriously? We know Cardiff historically like this competition. They've won it twice.
Cardiff like this tournament. I think I really fancy Cardiff to win that game up in Newcastle. You know, Welsh, quite a good number of the Welsh guys coming back into the camp. You know, whether obviously we probably won't see all of them involved, but they'll be feeling good. And I think it is a tournament that the Cardiff Blues will want to win. So I fancy them in that.
Yeah, I think what's been disappointing for Cardiff is there's been some really good element. I've been really impressed with how the tight five has gone in recent weeks. And I think someone like Ben Murphy is a really he's been a real find for them, has made a big difference. How many times have we said that Cardiff have just needed more grunt in the front five? And I think he's put in some big performances of late, you know, likewise the Thorntons and the Ratties and
Ratties gone like bad, isn't he?
Yeah, I think they've all been good. And the scrum has generally been good as well. It's been a massive difference having our hip fit. And so all the components are there, but there's a couple of games out there that they should have won. They really dropped off against Glasgow the other night. I think there was an opportunity to beat Ulster. You know, strangely, the best performance was probably against Leinster when they shipped 40 points. But, you know, they showed how they compete physically against a top class side. So I think they've got it all to do against Newcastle. I think for me, it depends what Newcastle are kind of targeting. They've started the season really well, but I think you might be right that Cardiff will probably take this a bit more seriously than Newcastle, just given that Newcastle got stung a couple of years ago when they were in the Heineken Cup off the back of that good finish in the league and trying to fight a war on two fronts, and they ended up getting relegated. So I think that they will be, you know, if they get a win, great. They might kind of keep their eye on it, but I think the league is the priority for them, and perhaps that gives Cardiff a better opportunity. Saturday afternoon, the European Champions Cup, Heineken Cup in old money. Bath versus Scarlets at Bath. Guy, think back to that fantastic game a few seasons ago. Tyke Burns sidestepping Anthony Watson, all that. This would have been fantastic.
In the wet.
Yeah, it would be fantastic to have the rec packed out for, so wouldn't good. It? Which is, you know, hopefully those kind of scenes aren't too far away. But yeah, Bath versus Scarlets. What do you make of this, Dan? This is a tricky one to call, I think. I think it's going to be tricky for Scarlets to get a result here.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think your money's probably just on Bath for that one, with it being at home.
Toby straight back into the team for them?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, straight in. And yeah, I'd probably have Bath to edge that one. I'd love to be going down to watching it.
That would be fantastic, wouldn't it? Yeah, it'd be a great one to go to. I'll tell you what, I wouldn't mind going to this either. Dragons Wasps in the Heineken Cup as well, which is, you know, does seem very strange.
That's a fascinating game now.
Well, it is. Wasps obviously had a fantastic season last season and finished runners up in the Premiership. Dragons, obviously, you know, we kind of know where they are. But Wasps had a stuttering start to the season, again, lost to Newcastle this weekend. It's, I don't know. I mean, I would anticipate that Wasps are just going to have too much class here. Again, this thing about fighting a war on two fronts, you know, Dragons have genuinely, with that win today, have kept the opportunity of a playoff place alive. I know it's still very, very early in the season, but you know, what would be more important to them? Realistically, they're not going to get to a Heineken Cup quarterfinal, are they? What would you be tempted to do if you're Dean Ryan? Do you want to keep the momentum and you go fully loaded and really try and build something here and pick up a scalp? Or do you try and rotate and keep everyone fit for the Christmas derbies?
It's a very, very tough one, isn't it? Because you do want to keep the wins coming, but the squad just is not big enough, is it, to put out the top side and, you know, then expect probably not to pick up an injury or two, or it's too risky then, I'd say, isn't it? I think that they'll probably have to rotate a little bit for this Wasps game. the focus is probably on those derbies, really. It seems a little bit defeatist, but I think we've got to be realistic, haven't we?
Possibly. The thing that might help Dragons here, and I think this has helped them in the last 2 weeks where they've picked up back-to-back away wins, is they had a few weeks off. They've had a good break and a good chance to train together and iron out some of those faults that had dogged the start of the season. I know it seemed like horribly bad news at the time when they had the games postponed due to the positive tests, but I think they've really benefited from having that break and coming back. And perhaps that means that there is an opportunity. Whereas Wasps have been playing a hell of a lot of rugby. They've gone all the way to the final. They've had a few weeks off. Then they're into this. I don't know, if I was Dean Ryan, I'd be tempted to go for this, because a win over Wasps would be massive. It would be absolutely massive.
I'm sold. I'm sold. I'm complete U-turn. Got to go for the win. Best side. Get the win against Wasps, and the season is well and truly on. Come on, the Dragons.
Watch this. Ollie Griffiths limps off after 8 minutes. And normal service is resumed, and I'm back to being the world's biggest pessimist. But I don't know. I'd be half tempted to go for it. But maybe that's just the high of...
No, I'm with you. Got to go for it. What on earth was I thinking?
Ospreys versus Cast is the final Welsh... related fixture, and that is at 8 p.m. on Saturday night. Again, you never know what the French relationship with this tournament is going to be like. That's one of those absolute cliches out there. Is this important to the Ospreys? Is the league more important? I don't know. I think, given how poor their last few seasons have been, they could do a lot worse than targeting a cup run in the Challenge Cup.
Yeah, I think wins are wins, aren't they? Need to get a win. So yeah, Cass coming over, got to be looking at a win there.
Do you know what, as well, I think, Dan, like, let's say you were to get out of the Challenge Cup and head into a quarterfinal, and I think that the opportunity, of getting a big fixture and the chance to have a crowd there would be something absolutely massive. Again, it might still only be a limited crowd by then, but I don't know, it just could be something that would really buoy the spirits at the region. And I don't know, to go on a cup run, I think would give the Ospreys something to cheer in a few seasons that they have had absolutely nothing to cheer. You know, because the thing is, the whole time they've been in the Heineken Cup getting absolutely drubbed, really. And it's an opportunity, I think, to go out and, like you say, wins are wins, and I think it would do a lot for the morale of the side and of the region, who have started okay, and I think that they're moving in the right direction, but this could be a little shot in the arm for me.
Yeah, cup run can do wonders, can't it? Especially at the Ospreys, where you've had a lot of change, haven't you? And so I think, that'd be a good tournament to target and, really go for the wins. If it comes off, fantastic. If it doesn't, look, it's not the end of the world. But yeah, that's, it'd be good to see a good cup run from the Ospreys, wouldn't it? Really give them a boost.
Yeah, I think you're right. You looking forward to those games?
I am looking forward to those games. Scarlet's Bath is that's mouth-watering, isn't it? Similarly, actually, I'm gonna almost say all of them here. I've got to say that the Dragons against Wasps, really looking forward to that. Blues against Newcastle, that should be a solid and good game as well. But I think for me, the pick of them would be Dragons, Wasps, and Bath. Bath Scarlets. They're the ones I'm really, really looking forward to. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I hate to end the show on a downer, but it is just, it's such a shame that, I think off the back of like two wins for the Dragons and then having Wasps at home, you could have seen a good crowd at Rodney off the back of that. It could have been exactly what people were looking for. And I think particularly against an English side, and that would really have been it could have been a night that the old place was rocking. And likewise, Scarlet's Bath, as we said, we saw that a few years ago, you know, one of those fantastic atmospheres that you get at club rugby and Scarlett's.
These are the games we want, aren't they?
They are the games you want.
They're the games we all want. And yeah, I think the stadiums would be packed, absolutely packed.
Even Newcastle Cardiff, you'd love a night out in Newcastle, wouldn't you?
Yeah. I mean, those are, you know, that's a game as well. Yeah, you really want to be involved with as a spectator and as a player as well. I suppose you do, don't you? You know, Wales, England, club sides. It'll be great. Yeah, and for supporters, you know, going up to Newcastle, having an absolute humdinger of a night out. And a weekend, you know, there'll be some stories there, that's for sure. Stories that can't be repeated. And then back, you know, back to work on a Monday. It's exactly what we want, isn't it? It's just a bit of a shame that, you know, the times we're in. But still, you know, we want these games, don't we? So, even though there's no fans there, it's exciting now, and it's going to be a good week moving forward, isn't it, because of that?
Yeah. Well, I'll end it on more of a positive then, because we had a wander round this morning to the rugby club around the corner from us, and my wife's nephews. Oh, I swear they're my nephews as well. What the hell am I talking about? So my nephews were playing. We're playing in touch, and again, it's just been good to see. You know, even though it's not the same yet, and you can't go and sit in the clubhouse afterwards and all that stuff, it's just nice to see a degree of a little bit of return to normality. And as soon as those things are, that I guess, you know, you take for granted as soon as they come back, you know, how amazing would it be to just go to any rugby club and watch a game and stand and have a pint in the clubhouse, you know, as you and I have done many a time over the years, and then, yeah, go to a professional game and get to stand on the terraces. God, you know, it's just, I don't know, Dan, I cannot wait for the return of those things.
And it does feel like it, doesn't it? We're edging closer to that as well. So, yeah, everyone's just got to hang on in there now. But yes, it's the simple things, isn't it, that you realise you miss so much. So, yeah, not long to go then.
There we go. All right. Well, it's been another fantastic set of questions. Apologies we couldn't get through all of them, but keep them coming every week. We love answering them. And, yeah, we will be back next week to look at the results from the Heineken Cup and from the Challenge Cup. A quick word, as always, for our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. We've got some great offers on at the moment. So if you're struggling with ideas of what to get some of your family or friends for Christmas, you could do a lot worse than heading on to socoffeetrades.co.uk. Get it all sorted there. Delivery, the works, all done. So yeah, big thanks to them for sponsoring us for the last few years. But that's it from us. We'll be back to chat rugby with you very, very soon.
Podcast Network.